Leader!
Order.
The Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday the 3rd of November, the Government will look to advance a number of bills on the order paper, including the Taxation Bright Line Test for Residential Land Bill, the Taxation Annual Rates for 2015-16 Research and Development and Remedial Matters Bill. As agreed by the Business Committee, Mr Speaker, extended hours will be taken on the morning of Wednesday the 4th of November for government business, and as indicated yesterday, the House will rise at approximately 5:45 or at the conclusion of the new Green Party member's speech.
Gerry Brownlee with that preview of the week ahead when the House resumes after a week's adjournment at 2 on Tuesday. As the government's leader of the House, Mr Brownlee's responsibilities include delivery of that weekly business statement before question time on Thursdays. And that also makes him the government's chief strategist in the House. While the party whips handle the tactical aspects of debates and divisions, the leader of the House manages the government's legislative program. And Mr Brownlee has a bill in the works himself as the minister in charge of earthquake recovery. We'll come back to that later in the program. First, though, there was one select committee meeting during the adjournment, and Rhys Lyon followed the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee to Auckland for an all-day hearing of submissions on two bills.
Meeting at Auckland Airport's Novotel Hotel Conference Room on Tuesday, the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee heard submissions on two employment-related bills. One of those was the Employment Standards Legislation Bill, which aims to promote fairer and more productive workplaces with enhanced protections and benefits for both employers and employees. Making a submission on the bill, First Union's General Secretary Robert Reid voiced concerns about the bill's lack of provisions around agreed hours for employees.
There seems to be, in the drafting of the legislation, that someone, was it Rumpelstiltskin or someone else, who sort of has woken up Post-Employment Contracts Act and has sort of drafted the legislation as if we were in the old, more regulated pre-1991 position, where every award did have agreed hours, and it had often it was between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Monday to Friday, and you worked within those.
Mr Reid said the bill as drafted would not provide employees with assurance around the hours between which they could expect to work, something he said was a growing problem for workers.
That's the reason why if you're a Newlyn resident you weren't able to get into Bunnings a week ago, because of the protests about the quantum stays, but the employer wanting the right to change when those hours are going to be worked rather than what's currently in that agreement, which is that any changes are by mutual agreement.
The First Union General Secretary said that at best the bill was unclear around working hours expectations.
Because in the proposed bill, quite a bit of emphasis is actually put on this area, which requires an employer to ensure that an employee's agreed hours of work are included in the employee's employment agreement. If we take at face value, which some of our other union comrades or colleagues don't, and sort of our submission doesn't, but if we take it on face value that this is a genuine attempt to try and do something about gross casualisation, zero hours, zero control of hours, then much of it depends on this phrase, agreed hours. And it's in the legislation, but our problem is that the legislation itself really doesn't define that.
Mr Reid said problems around contracted hours were an ongoing concern.
If you look at our agreements now, even in some of our good agreements on the hours of work clause, because of particularly the period of the Employment Contracts Act, you could drive a bus through them. They don't define hours at all. They sort of say hours of work is 40 hours per week, full stop. Doesn't say when, doesn't say how, doesn't say what's going to happen.
And Mr Reid suggested employee dissatisfaction around work hours was likely to get worse.
Because the way that most employment agreements are going, both individual and collective, hours simply say 40 hours are available or 20 hours are available, but you can work them any time of the day and night, any time of the week, and we'll decide when you're going to work them. And I think the whole reaction against 0 hours was not necessarily about the zero part of it. It was against the zero control that workers had over those hours.
Robert Reid pointed to what he said was a glaring omission in the bill.
The new bill just says, for the purpose of those sections, agreed hours of work mean, but if you look at the next A and B, it doesn't say what they mean. So I'm really pleading with you to put in there what they mean. It's an Alice in Wonderland. It says it just means what the agreements say it means. But that's no use.
So Mr. Reid put forward a recommendation to the committee.
What might give you a bit of a hint, perhaps, is that the people drafting the bill have referred it back to what should be in an individual agreement. And it says, an indication of the arrangements relating to the times that the employee is to work. Not just the quantum of hours, like you've got 40 hours over the next week, it's up to me when I get you to work those 40 hours, but that part says time. So I really want you to look at that fact that if it is time and not just a quantum of hours, I think the bill needs to be much clearer about that.
First Union's General Secretary Robert Reid, while another submission on the bill came from Vicky Mee, representing the Social Justice Council of the Anglican Diocese of Auckland. She raised concerns about workers who struggled to make ends meet because their total work hours were not guaranteed.
What has happened is that they have taken jobs that have got hours, guaranteed hours, but low guaranteed hours, less than they can live on. And so some weeks they do, you know, they have good hours and they can live on it. But other weeks they're ringing up Wins on the Friday to tell them how many hours they've worked because there is a top-up payment. And so there is this yo-yoing, but they, as an income earner, need to get a top-up. And this happens so often, I suppose about 50% of the time, probably. And they have good weeks and they have bad weeks. And they've missed the rent, and particularly if a bad week follows, and then they get into debt, the landlord is saying, hey, and you know the tenancy agreement is under threat, and then we've got to try and work it out. And it is very difficult to work out because a huge amount of discipline is required to actually put aside in the good weeks, and that's what I try and help them do. So we've got, but there is no guarantee on it at all. We've got more and more people living in that sort of anxious situation of not being sure they can pay the rent, they can pay for food.
Vicky Mee also suggested that holding down two or more jobs wasn't always a practical solution for people who didn't have fixed hours.
At the moment, I have not got clients where it's actually written in that they won't have any other job, but the pressure of being on call tends to weigh out even considering another job. Plus the dangle that, you know, there will be more hours. But this, again, is the difference between a casual job. If you're a cleaner and you know you're going to a motel, and if jobs are available, they're 9 to 12, that's it, then there's no problem with a casual job. You get an afternoon job or an evening job. With one of these contracts, which is you've got so many hours and you don't know when they are and it's on the end of the phone, well, you haven't got a clear space to find an alternative job which is going to match. So that's part of the issue here.
And Ms. Mee also had a suggestion to the committee of what not to do.
In Britain, in March this year, they brought in a law around zero-hour contracts, and there was quite specific conditions there about exclusivity. And in fact, it's only 6, 7, 8 months down the track, and it's found to have no teeth. So whatever they did in Britain, don't do that. Because it doesn't work, apparently.
Anglican Diocese of Auckland Social Justice Council representative Vicky Mee making a submission on the Employment Standards Legislation Bill to the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee, which also spent Tuesday morning hearing submissions on the Minimum Wage Contractor Remuneration Amendment Bill, a members' bill in the name of Labour's David Parker. Both those bills are due to be reported back from the committee by the 12th of February.
That report from Rhys Lyon. And there are just 3 days before submissions close on Gerry Brownlee's Greater Christchurch Regeneration Bill, which he introduced on Monday, October the 19th, so it could have its first reading on the following Thursday after spending the minimum 3 days on the order paper. The bill creates a new legal framework for the next 5 years, replacing the structure put in place by the Canterbury Earthquake Recovery Act in 2011, and provides an increased role for local leadership. Although supported by opposition parties for its first reading, there was some disquiet at the short time the government was setting aside for submissions and their consideration by the Local Government and Environment Committee. Among Labour's Christchurch MPs taking part in the bill's first reading debate was Clayton Cosgrove.
Sir, as my colleague Megan Woods and others have said, we will support this piece of legislation to our select committee, and like others, we would want to see a full and open scrutiny and the opportunity for as many Cantabrians and others, because there are smart people all over New Zealand, to participate in the process. We are disappointed that it is a truncated process. Now, I know the Minister will say it's 5 weeks. I think that is the dates. However, that doesn't take into account, of course, that the House rises on 9 December. We come back in 9 February. The report back date is 25 February.
But Mr Brownlee rejected Clayton Cosgrove's complaint.
We will be voting for the 25th of February report back. That gives a total of 15 weeks between now and that report back, where the House could expect it would be working. So 7 weeks between now and the 18th of December, and 8 weeks from the 18th of January to the 25th of February. On that basis, sir, I think we're not cutting the short time short.
Not according to the number of weeks on the calendar, but Mr Cosgrove pointed out that some of them would be spent at the beach.
Generally, it's a protocol in this House that, especially over pretty essential bills like this, that the Christmas period is a bit of a no-go zone, because people obviously are focusing on families and getting away and actually having a bit of time off, especially those in Canterbury. And generally, we normally give extensions to cater for that, so people can either beforehand or after make a contribution. My colleague Megan Woods has proposed an extended period to the 24th of March. That should be no impediment to the government, because it still allows a report back period, or an enactment prior to the SERA legislation expiring. So I would just ask the Minister to consider that as we go through.
But when that amendment from Megan Woods was put to the vote, Mr Brownlee enlisted the help of his support parties in the Chamber, ACT, United and the Murray Party, to carry the day by 63 votes to 58. That was followed by a debate on two bills which will enable some 40 hectares of the Riccarton Racecourse to be developed for housing. And that debate was interrupted for the valedictory speech from former Greens co-leader Russell Norman. I'm Tom Frewen, and this program was made with funding from Parliament.